So what does creativity mean to you?
Creativity, in the entrepreneurial sense, means figuring out how to accomplish something that you need to accomplish, how to accomplish moving from A to B. How I tend to try and do that is think long and hard about it. Usually a different solution or a different opportunity just tends to emerge from the mist. Equally, I love being in a room with my co-founders, sitting in front of a whiteboard. Okay, how do we actually solve this? And getting handfuls of different input, throwing their ideas around. Inevitably, a creative next try seems to just emerge from that process. So just thinking about things, figuring them out, drawing input from people, you can typically come up with a way to solve a problem better than what it does beforehand.
Welcome to Corporate Thought, the podcast where we talk about everything from food to family to music to a life of entrepreneurship and anything and everything else that makes life worth living. Welcome to the show. Hey, welcome to Corporate Thought. I'm Mark Marling. Welcome to today's episode. I'm excited to be with you. Today, I'm going to bring you a conversation with Larry Harding of the HSP Group. We'll get into that a little bit, but essentially HSP is a group that works with your business and helps you get you ready to bring your business overseas. And I'm excited to talk to Larry about what that looks like. But first, I need to update you on something. Whenever I'm learning about new tools, new places to gain information, I want to share that with you. And sometimes I'm late to the party. So I just learned, apparently behind the times, about Andrew Huberman and the Huberman Lab. Apparently this is already in the know and is one of the most popular podcasts out there, but I just learned about it. If you haven't listened to the Huberman Lab, take the time. These are long episodes. These things go for several hours. People used to complain about my episodes being too long. These things are essentially an education in neuroscience from Stanford University professor and neuroscientist Andrew Huberman. He quotes and cites many of his colleagues, including Aaliyah Crumb, including Carol Dweck, and I am currently just absolutely jiving on his episode about growth mindset. I'm just getting into this guy, but absolutely check it out because I think it is worth your time and lots of great information. So not to confuse growth mindset with our topic of the day, entrepreneurial mindset, but we're going to continue on our exploration of that entrepreneurial mindset, specifically about creativity. I know in the past we had other guests on talking about creativity, but today Larry Harding, who developed a business because he saw a need that just appeared to him as people kept asking him questions. So what do we think about creativity? Well, creativity plays a crucial role in the entrepreneurial mindset in that it allows entrepreneurs to think outside the box. They generate innovative ideas. They find unique solutions to problems. It involves the ability to connect seemingly unrelated concepts, take risks, and envision new possibilities. Entrepreneurs with a creative mindset are constantly seeking opportunities and thinking of unique ways to address challenges or fulfill unmet needs. They see that opportunity and they grasp onto it. They explore various perspectives, question assumptions, and combine existing concepts to create something new and valuable. And that's exactly what my guest, Larry Harding, did multiple times, as you will hear, in building his company, HSP Group. Look, creativity fuels innovation. It's a key driver in entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurs need to continuously adapt and innovate their products, services, and business models to stay ahead in dynamic markets. A creative mindset allows entrepreneurs to embrace change, spot emerging trends, and develop novel strategies to meet evolving customer needs. So, with no more introduction than that, I'm going to bring you my conversation with Larry Harding. So, Larry Harding, welcome to Corporate Thought.
Thank you very much, Mark. Happy to be here.
I am excited for this conversation. I know that you are, you know, what you do today is somewhat interesting in helping sort of cross-border expansions and international expansions of businesses. And maybe for part of my audience, that is something that they're thinking about. Some of them may just be just still getting set up, you know, in their home country. We're going to assume the United States for purposes of this conversation, but although not necessarily. But I know that some of them believe that they have a global market or at least a country market in front of them. And that gets kind of scary, you know, stepping outside of what they're used to into something new. But people like you, I guess, do that.
We exist to help people do that, to get over those fears and make that jump and do so successfully. Yep, absolutely.
So how did you find your way into that space?
Completely by accident. So I started my career at one of the big, large accounting firms. I was on the audit staff. I did M&A work. And then in the 90s, like a lot of my peers, the tech boom was taking off in Boston, where I was from. So almost all of us jumped ship from the public accounting world to take finance and accounting positions at various venture-backed technology companies. I did a few of them in Boston in the late 90s. Some of them went public, some got, you know, acquired. All of them had a lot of challenges, including significant challenges as we tried to go overseas. So I felt like it was my job trying to recreate a wheel every single country we went into. I felt like I was spending a third of my time on 2-3% of my workforce because the challenges were different from country to country. There was no real one place to go to have that taken care of for you. In 99, I was with a CFO of a company that was acquired by a large telecoms company called Ciena that was, you know, significantly riding the whole, you know, networking craze back in the Cisco, the whole dot-com, the telecom boom. Ciena was in hypergrowth and they were in 30 different countries overseas. They needed someone to really bring, you know, order to that madness. So I became their head of international finance. And for 4 years, I helped a company on steroids going into different countries all the time, dealing with numerous challenges from people and compliance and taxes and product getting in and out. And I realized after doing that for 4 years, my entire job was recreating wheels and finding local providers to try and do the same things. It was different from country to country. And after doing that for 4 years, when I really wished and felt there should be a company out there that I could just call and outsource, take care of all this stuff, I decided that I needed to be an entrepreneur and start that company that should have existed before. So in 2003, I started a company called High Street Partners, total back of the envelope. Looking back, I and eventually we had no idea what we were doing, but we, you know, figured it out. We came up with solutions. We figured out how to serve the companies, especially the venture-backed tech ones like I'd been with before, how to deal with sort of their challenges, which we knew were, you know, they're sitting at headquarters trying to put out a million different fires. The international work is just one of those things. If we can be a partner to take care of them via services, via technology, via making everything sort of consistent from country to country, you know, we had a customer for life. And by focusing on venture-backed tech companies, it was actually kind of interesting. You know, some of our newer clients that nobody had ever heard of eventually became companies like NetSuite or Airbnb or Tesla or just a host of name brand companies. And we were the first people to sort of help them go overseas. So it was, you know, really interesting ride. We built a great team of co-founders and people who just figured out how to get it done. We ended up selling High Street Partners in 2014 in a private equity-backed merger transaction with a competitor company. I stayed around there for a while. I eventually went to work for a larger global expansion company in the market for a few years. And then in 2020, as the pandemic was making sort of the job less fun and interesting, I decided to go back to my entrepreneurial roots a second time, founded HSP Group, lined up as a financial partner, one of the two venture capital firms that had invested in my first company, took on a bunch of my first company co-founders, a bunch of the people from the larger company I'd been working with, and we went out to do it again. And it's like a lot of things in life. I found that it's easier and quicker and more efficient to do things a second time. You hopefully avoid most of the mistakes you made the first time. And you really tend to get not flustered as you see different challenges, they emerge because you've been through them before. So I'm having a blast doing it a second time. We have a fantastic team, and HSP Group is really, you know, starting off successfully here and in what will, you know, getting close to year three. So,
no, that's cool. And I, you know, lots of things you talked about to sort of unpack there. One of the last things you said, which I thought was interesting, was by doing it the second time, you're avoiding some of the mistakes of the first time. But I'm actually in the middle of reading a book at the moment where they talk about learning from failure, that failure really helps us find our way. And then, you know, we rebound and we find, okay, we can't do it that way. That didn't work. So let's try it a different way. I don't know if that,
well, it's, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I completely agree with that, but I don't think I ever tend to use the word failure. What I found the entrepreneurial journey to be really is like trying to figure out how to get to where you're going by a GPS. You can make a wrong turn, but eventually, if you can figure out how to make the right turn, you are eventually going to get there. I'm not a sailor personally, but two of my kids were college sailors. And so I've learned from them, it's constant course correction. You know, the current changes, the wind changes, the competitor boats change. And when you're trying to win a regatta, you're constantly just, you know, adjusting various inputs to figure out how to get to where you want to go. I think entrepreneurship is like that. So I've never ever thought of it as failure. It's always, okay, what's the course correction that's needed? And that tends to be constant. So,
you know, fair enough. We'll blame the book I'm reading is Lewis Howes' book, The Greatness Mindset. So we'll blame him for using the term failure.
We all have different terms for probably the same thing.
Yeah, that's okay. But you also kind of found your way into, like I said, you discovered a need and then you built a business around that need. Is that, I mean, that's how you described it, I think.
That's completely, yeah, the case. You know, I'd love to sit here and say I'm, you know, have anything to do with Thomas Edison or Henry Ford, but I'm not an inventor. You know, I'm not the type to create something out of nothing. Really the way I got into being entrepreneurial was identifying a clear need that I knew like the back of my hand and just, you know, thinking to myself, I think, you know, this should exist. I'm pretty sure I can figure out how to make it exist. So kind of a different type of entrepreneur. And I really never thought I would be one earlier in my career. But yeah, certain market needs and opportunities can sometimes just jump out and grab you. So.
Yeah. And that, makes me think about that that creativity mindset that I've talked about in previous episodes, but perhaps again here, which is, you know, you identified an issue. I don't know if you had we could talk about passion. I'm not sure if you had a passion for this issue, but you identified an issue. It was something that you were dealing with in your own work environment. And you said, okay, I can't be the only one with this problem. There's a market here. I know there is.
Yeah. So that's for sure. I believed pretty strongly that if it was something as significantly needed and apparent, and what, you know, my company was doing was what, you know, dozens and hundreds and thousands of companies were doing, that the need had to be relatively universal. And I think it was really just sort of identifying how it could be done differently. and then, you know, having enough of the confidence and the you know, experience and expertise and training, I was very fortunate in what I was able to do before, really to just be able to jump in with a decent enough chance of being successful. You know, when we started this in 2003, I had no idea, you know, how large the market opportunity was, how universal. You know, we eventually found that what worked for venture-backed tech companies actually worked for universities. So we ended up working with most of the Ivy League back in the day as they were dealing with having a global footprint, setting up, you know, remote campuses and different things like that. So the need was even more universal than I realized. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I clearly do have a passion for what I do. I hate to characterize myself as a one-trick pony, but I've kind of been doing the same thing now for 20 years, and then 5 years before that, you know, tangentially doing it. But I think, you know, when you do something long enough and you experience success and you have an opportunity to work with, you know, people who are immensely more talented than I ever was doing this, you know, it tends to feel as much like a hobby, you know, or a life pursuit as it does a job or a career, for sure.
How do you move, though? So being that you've done this and you're doing it yet again, and I completely understand that you now you understand the market and you've done it, so you know how to rinse and repeat. But how did you move, if you can recall, that first time from, okay, this is an idea, right? This is something that I need, that I'm doing every day, so I know there's a need. But that leap, how did you move from there to actually, okay, I'm going to start a business around this? Because there's a big difference from, hey, this is a need. We can all think of needs every day that we're like, oh, I wish someone invented this or that. Maybe we do it, but that doesn't take it from there to let me build a business around this for others.
So that's actually a really interesting question. So when I first started doing it, you know, again, really didn't have an idea what I was doing or what I wanted to do. So I was kind of a one-man band. So basically it's like, well, I can be a consultant helping companies with a problem going overseas. So I sent Christmas cards out to like 115 of my contacts. And one of them happened to be on the board of a publicly traded company up in Boston. And they were having some issues. During their audit, they got a management letter comment related to their overseas office in the UK. So he called me up and said, do you mind if I connect you with our CFO? I spoke with her and I basically parachuted in to their UK operation to figure out how to get it cleaned up. That became a fantastic, I mean, you know, blessing of client number one. But it was all me just billing, you know, however many hours a week. And then it was, you know, so successful that I was able to hire a couple of people to sort of, hey, on the side, while I'm taking care of, you know, this large gorilla client, you know, let's go after doing a lot less for a few more companies. And that became very successful, that the, you know, founding folks I brought in, you know, lined up clients number 2, 3, 4, 5. And then that quickly grew beyond what they could really do. And I was spending most of my time with the large client. And I remember the phone call distinctly. The decision I made was like, you know, in order to move forward and build a business, I basically had to end the relationship with client number one, which, you know, we'd cleaned up what we needed to clean up. So I didn't leave them high and dry, but it was a big, you know, cash cow type of client. I had to sort of call and let them go and say, we're going to actually focus on these next 5 clients who are much smaller and hope we're successful. I do distinctly remember hanging up the phone thinking, oh boy, what did I just do here? I hope I guessed the right fork in the road, but we did. So there were a handful of, you know, sort of similar junctures, I guess, over the years, but that one was certainly number one and profound. So that was, you know, that was sort of the leap into, hey, we're going to try this as a business versus something different than that.
No. I love hearing the story. I love hearing how you got into it and your take on, you know, be it both passion for an industry and creativity in turning it into a business. If people want to reach out, Larry, because they're thinking about this, they want to get some advice, they're looking for something, how do they find you in the HSP group?
Well, one of the, again, I may not be the most creative person in the world. The domain URL for my first company called High Street Partners was hsp.com. When we sold that business, I kept the URL personally because it was of no need to the acquiring company. And then over the years, that's all changed hands several times. So basically, I own the URL. So hsp group exist because it can be hsp.com. So the easiest way to find us and the services that we provide and how to connect with us, you know, would be on our website, hsp.com. We have a pretty strong presence on LinkedIn. So you can certainly find us there pretty easily. You know, I'm lharding at hsp.com is my email. So you can always reach out to me. So we try and make ourselves easily found for sure.
Wonderful. Well, Larry, thanks for coming on Corporate Thought today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the time. I'll talk to you soon.
So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Larry. You know, through the conversation, we explored the essence of creativity and the indispensable role it plays in the entrepreneurial landscape. You know, from cultivating a curious mind to embracing failure as a stepping stone to success, we've discovered that creativity and the entrepreneurial spirit go hand in hand. We've learned it's not just about generating ideas, but about translating those ideas into meaningful action, fueled by resilience, adaptability, and a relentless pursuit of excellence. The true beauty of creativity and the entrepreneurial mindset lies in its ability to transcend boundaries. We're not confined by any particular field or industry, but rather we're limitless in the application. So whether you're an artist, a scientist, a business owner, or simply someone seeking to make a difference, these principles can guide you on a journey that leads to extraordinary achievement. And you should not ever take that for granted. Thanks for listening and spending your time with us. And as you embark on your own remarkable journey, here's wishing you boundless inspiration, unwavering determination, and courage to shape a future that surpasses all expectations. I'll be back next week with another episode. Remember, the world is waiting for your brilliance. Go forth and create your own extraordinary legacy. Until next time, this is Mark. Talk to you soon.